This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 86, recorded on August 30th, 2012. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show each week with world-class show notes out at theAverageGuy.tv. You can contact me or the show at just send us an email, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv. You can track me down on Twitter, just at Jay Collison, or follow the show schedule. We usually post if we're going to change times or if I have to cancel the show for some reason on that Twitter account, just TheAverageGuyTV. As well, you can catch the show on demand. We've got all the links available for you to download it to any device that you have or watch it right there out at TheAverageGuy.tv. All right, let's get right to it. We've all had a very busy week, and there's lots of tech action going on. I've been getting some comments and some feedback from you guys saying, get right to the show and quit saying all this mumbo jumbo blah, blah, blah. So let's get right to it. First, all the way to the left, from Melbourne, Australia, and the guy with the new haircut, and the guy who never lets me start the show on time, Andrew Morris. Andrew, how are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. It's been a long week.
I know work is just nuts for you, and it's Friday afternoon for you. You could probably take the rest of the day off, I would think, wouldn't you? Your lunch break now, but you just take the rest of the afternoon off, Andrew. You could do that.
Okay. All right. I was going to anyway, but you know, now I've got your blessing, it's all good.
You guys get like 15 weeks of vacation down there in Australia, so
15?
I don't know what you're complaining about. Yeah. I don't know what you're complaining about. So, well, it's always good to have you. Thanks for coming on. To his right, of course, the guy behind NASA and is now running the government secretly behind closed doors that we don't know about, Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you?
All opinions expressed in this broadcast are thereby of their owners and do not reflect NASA or any strategies employed by NASA.
Yes, he's saying that to protect his own, to protect himself, but we all know secretly. You're doing all right, Christian?
I'm doing well, yeah.
And you're not back in school yet?
Nope, next week,
right after the holiday. You get everybody gets Monday off here in the United States, and then you start on Tuesday?
Yep, Thursday.
Yeah, is all your AP homework caught up and ready to go?
I was actually finishing the last bits of the due tonight.
And then you got ACTs coming up, right? That you're studying diligently for. We want you to max that thing. So just get in there, study, and get it done.
Yep.
And then back this week and guest host for, I don't know, third or fourth time, and it's always good to have him on, John Stussman. He goes by Joe Miner out in the Home Server Show forums, and he is our resident HP Microserver N40L guy. Nobody knows more about those than you, John. How are you?
Well, after that introduction, what can I say? I'm doing great. Today is actually a Friday for me. I'm going to be off tomorrow, so it's going to be a long weekend.
Nice.
My son is coming over to visit, and I'm going to see my grandson, so I'm looking forward to that. So
very good. Very good. Well, glad to have you on. I almost put good and glad in this. And I like to jam those words together, and so glad to have you on, and good to have you this week. And I know you got some good stuff to talk about, and we're going to get right to it. You had said, John, you said in the notes that you'd been at a hospital recently, and you came across a PC still running Windows XP.
I put it in my show notes. This week has been a busy week for me. It started out kind of bad late Sunday night. My father went into the hospital in St. Louis. And so I've been spending a lot of time there. I was there all day Monday. And
how far are you from St. Louis?
It's about 2 hours.
Oh, okay. So not too far. I thought you were farther east for some reason.
So I was down there, and I noticed walking the halls, and in the area we were too, it's not intensive care, but it was kind of in between, and noticed a lot of computer terminals. And as I put in the show notes, I saw that the computer terminals were running XP, Windows XP. And, you know, here we are talking about, you know, people making the transition from Windows 7 to Windows 8, and we have hospitals running Windows XP, which is, you know, nearing its end of life, so to speak. It just made me wonder. I was thinking about this in the hospital. And another thing that kind of came to mind was I had read a John Dvorak article talking about, you know, the Iranians, they now know who sent them those viruses that messed up all their equipment. And so we were good enough to tell them. And they have the code. and they can reverse engineer the code, and what if they send it back to us? So, you know, I was thinking about, you know, well, what would happen if those viruses that messed up all their nuclear weapons program come back this way? And, you know, those are pleasant thoughts to be thinking about while you're sitting in a hospital that's running Windows XP. So it's
yeah, well, first of all, viruses won't run on XP anymore because the OS is too old. No, that's not true at all.
They'll skip over it and go to Windows 7, I know.
Yeah, you know, I asked when my dad was in the hospital back in the winter, and the guy came in to do some imaging, and he brought this big machine in, and it had a monitor on it, and I forget exactly. I think it was some heart imaging that they were doing on him. At one point the Windows XP hybrid, you know, where it goes in screensaver. There we go. Screensaver popped up, and I'm like, "Are you kidding me? That's still XP?" He goes, "Yeah, actually, it works. It works great." And he says the software that we use for the imaging is still only compatible with XP. They've never updated the software, so we can't move it onto anything else. And you know, of course, the money's the bottom line for a hospital, just like it is anything else, and for some of these companies. And so they just don't take the time, or they haven't gone through the expense. When it works, this is one of those things, right? When that they're going to end of life that software when they end of life the equipment. And so it's just not – it's going to be out there forever. Now, in this case, you know, who knows if that thing, you know, where it's connected or if it's a Wi-Fi. They're probably not Wi-Fi because it was so hard to configure Wi-Fi and XP and actually get it working. But, you know
they seem to have a pretty extensive network. And they did I was using the Wi-Fi at the hospital. And they had a guest Wi-Fi account that you could get into, which worked pretty well. But I noticed when I got into that, I was also seeing about a dozen other Wi-Fi hotspots in the hospital, which was interesting. They were all locked down except for the guest Wi-Fi. But
you know, some of the best Wi-Fi I've gotten is in hospitals when I've been. I've spent a ton of time in hospitals in the last year for whatever reason. Friends and family have been in a lot, and some hospitals are doing a nice job of getting Wi-Fi to their customers. You know, they have an open network there that you can connect to. I've gotten a lot of work done at a hospital, you know, just sitting there waiting around for something to happen. But yeah, certainly XP. Rennie says in chat that in all of Queensland is the government still runs on Windows XP. I'm sure a lot of our government is still running XP machines. I mean, Andrew, what in the enterprise are you still coming across?
Yeah, we've still got a lot of XP. We got a lot now in both my current customer and also their business as a whole. So they run a gambling business. Pretty much every poker machine in the country that's got an embedded operating system in it is still running on XP. And one of the reasons behind that is XP embedded, the way they strip it down is about 100 meg in size, whereas when they strip down a Windows 7 embedded, it comes out at about 4 gig. So, you know, to push something like that out over a really small DSL line is, you know, exceptionally efficient for XP, but it's not so efficient for 7, so they've got no driving motivation to upgrade at all.
Yeah, well, most of the security holes have been fixed. I mean, it's been around for 150 years, so, I mean, wouldn't you think it's pretty secure at this point?
Yeah, and especially the embedded platform, you know, in this particular instance, because once they've got it nailed down to what they needed to do, it's pretty much a read-only operating system as well. But you look at the number of ATM machines and point-of-sale systems in, you know, your supermarkets, your Walmarts, your out in Australia, your Woolworths and your Coles and the like. You know, most of those cash registers and whatnot are still running XP because there's nothing wrong with it. It just works.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've all got the if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if they're moving to something else, what I'm seeing is that they're going to QNX, which is a Unix variant because of the footprint and the performance quotient they get out of it.
Sure. John, your concern though?
I was just going to say, when's the XP end of life? Isn't it 2014?
500, chat says 560 days. at this point. Yeah. So a year and change. So, but John, I mean, this is a good question, and this has actually come up a lot as we've been talking about moving to Windows 8. So security updates stop coming out for Windows XP. I made a statement a second ago. They've probably patched everything there is to be patched for the most part.
Not yet, yeah.
You don't think so?
I have it running in VMs, and it still gets patched all the time.
Okay, so maybe that's a wrong assumption. So what you're saying is in 560 days, Microsoft stops delivering security patches for Windows XP.
Yeah, it's April 8th, 2014.
Now, why are you running it in VM, John?
Because
you can?
Just for fun. Well, no, really, I loaded up a bunch of VMs on my Colossus VM server, I call it. I call it Colossus.
Because it's a meat-eating huge monster, is that why?
Well, it's from the movie Colossus, the Forbin Project. But, okay. You know, it took over the world. But anyway, right. I was running a bunch of VMs because I was running it under Windows 8. And that's one of my bare metal installs of Windows 8 is Colossus. And I'm running it in Hyper-V. And I was testing to see what I could do to back up Hyper-V machines. And so I'm basically just, I loaded it up to see if I can break it. And see if I can do a restore. I haven't tried doing a restore yet that's been backing things up both incrementally and also with the Windows 7 version of backup. And I'm going to see, you know, shut things down and see what happens when I try to do a restore to that.
So that's why you have it running. Christian, certainly in the Johnson household, no XP machines, I am sure. Are you running across it anywhere? And with your renewed security interest as of late, what kind of advice do you have? I mean, if you've got it, you've got to move away from it like ASAP? Or
I still have one on a virtual machine that I use just for cross-browser testing. When I'm designing websites to make sure that's compatible on different platforms, older and newer. But yeah, in general, really, yes, the Vista 7 kernel and up is definitely a bit more bulletproof than the XP stuff. But if you have a good antivirus system, you're not unaware of what you're browsing on the internet, and you are being careful about how you're generating your passwords. Really not a terribly huge deal. I mean, I would advise the average users to move to a Windows 7 based platform, but it's not like if they're staying on XP, they're putting themselves in a catastrophic risk. I mean, that same risk is there in Windows 7 as it is with XP as soon as the Ethernet cable is connected to it. So when you're exposed to the internet, you need to basically it's what you're putting in is what you're getting out. So if what you're putting in is garbage, what you're getting out is garbage. So the better you are at browsing the internet and being able to identify malicious sites before you visit them, the better off you're going to be. And that goes with, I mean, you're not just going to catch a, you know, your computer can't get airborne viruses from your next door neighbors. So if you're being conscious of what's going on your computer and you are handling it well, then there shouldn't be too much of a concern if you're on a bit of an outdated system.
Okay. Well, you know what I am seeing quite a bit of, and you know we're tech guys for family, friends, right? I am starting to see it for a long time. I had like a break for about 9 months, maybe a year. I wasn't getting any computer problems from my friends. It just like dried up. What was like every other weekend for the longest time had gone to zilch. And then all of a sudden, recently, I'm starting to see a rash of Windows Vista laptops that are coming out of my friends and family. You know, Vista's still out there, and they're all infected. And I'm not saying it's Vista's fault that this is this way. I mean, this could be, like Christian, like you just said, a lot of this is user action caused, right? Them doing maybe not being the most savvy in their web browsing or what have you. But I found it weird that it was, I just saw these the last couple I've seen have all been on Windows Vista popping out, and they're like, oh, this thing is so slow, I can't even do anything with it, is there anything you can do? And I'll say, well, when was the last time, first of all, how old is it? And they all say it's 3 years old when it's like five. And then, you know, they all said, well, I just got this. Well, no, you didn't. And then I said, when was the last time you reinstalled Windows? And they're like, never. And then I go on there and run. You guys made fun of me last week, and I used, what's it, Hyrum's boot CD, and I said version 5. And somebody said it's up to version 10. It's actually version 15 at this point.
Not that hard. Okay.
I went and looked.
Could work, Jim.
I went and looked at the CD when we were done, so that's where I got the 5 from. But anyways, I boot in there with and I get a mini version of XP installed, and then I use Malwarebytes to get to the disk and run Malwarebytes on it. Malwarebytes, sorry. Sorry, Christian. You corrected me on that last week too. So they're all infected. So I don't know what's going on, if it's a timing thing, but that's what I'm seeing. Christian, do people bring equipment to you and say it's broken, can you help me fix it? Do you get those kind of calls too?
All the time.
Yeah. Any patterns?
Version of Windows Internet Explorer. The Vista machines have.
They're all running IE for sure.
I know, yeah, but which
IE's
one?
IE's the minimum on Vista.
Yeah.
Okay.
I laugh because I had a secretary at one of these places that was like some other pinhead computer tech in the area. Basically had told her several years ago, don't upgrade IE6 because IE8 is worse, or something to that effect, where she would sit and she would normally use Firefox, but in the case that she had IE6, she refused to upgrade it, which just boggles my mind.
Well, and that's what I see as the danger with XP, is if people haven't upgraded
Internet Explorer. Well, that's the thing, though. IE6 was a huge vulnerability for XP, but if you're on IE8 and XP, it's not a lot of that's gone. What I started doing on all my websites is if my website detects it's being loaded from IE6, they actually get a message that blocks out the entire website and says, wait a second, you're on IE6, and I don't care what browser you pick, but you need to stop using it, and here's how you can download it, and here's why you should. And so I did that on the website of where the secretary works at, among other things, but it really is kind of ridiculous. And I know Microsoft had that IE6 shutdown site that I think is still going on, right? They had that shutdown site that tells you percent people in the world. I think it's called IE6, Countdown. Yeah, IE6Countdown.com is keeping track, and it's saying that 6% of the world was using IE6, which is 5.3% less than what it was last year. And most of that is actually U.S. makes up like 0.1% of that figure. China makes up about 4%, is the largest shareholder of that 6%. So it looks like the majority of IE6 still remains in China, and what they label as rest of the world, which is like Saudi Arabia is 1.7%, India is 3%. So there's these various collages, but definitely the U.S. is what Microsoft is green mapping, because it's less than 1%, which is what they want.
Yeah, John, what were you going to say about 8?
Well, I have IE9 on everything. And, there's a big jump, I thought, in security going from IE8 to IE9. And I'm kind of itching to when they bring out IE10 to push that out to my machines.
Yeah, and I don't – see, this is what bothers me about – same thing with, like, Firefox started doing this rapid-fire upgrading, right? And same thing with Chrome. Chrome's at, like, version 21. Firefox is at version 17. IE's going into, I mean, think about it. Like, 2 years ago, Firefox was at version 3.6. and it was at 3.6 for several years before they went to the next major leap, which was Firefox 5. And then from Firefox 5 forward, it was just a monkey race. I mean, they went from 5 to 8 in like a couple months, and it's been like that ever since. And what I fear is happening, and I've seen it a bit in IE stuff, is that they are not maintaining, and it really kind of, that's a very broad generalization I'm about to throw out here, but I'm worried that they're limiting their ability to maintain the Web Space Consortium, not Space Consortium, the W3C Consortium that does all of the validation that basically sets the HTML standards. And so now that HTML5 and some of these newer technologies are playing around with these browsers and they're all trying to support it, I don't want to see them do the same thing they did in the IE6 era and Firefox 2 era, where every single browser had a different interpretation. Whereas, I mean, now IE9, Firefox 17, and Chrome, for most of the stuff I've been doing, have been consistently showing the same, have been rendering the page the same way, which is good, because it's a pain for developers to do cross-browser testing. And one of the big things that stunk with IE was that IE7 would look completely different from IE8 and so forth. And then when they started with that compatibility button, then there's a meta tag for developers that you can control the compatibility button. And then there's one of the things that IE had that none of the other browsers had was when they realized they were in such a compatibility mess, they made this like system where you could write HTML comments where all the other browsers would just see it as HTML comments and ignore it. But to the IE browser, it knew that it was a flag that, like, if my major version is 6 or 7 or 8, then these rules apply, and they would normally be like CSS hacks or corrections to make it look universal. And it was just dumb. And I mean, even if you look at WordPress themes today, all of them, almost all of them, will have a separate style sheet that says IE6.css and IE7.css. Because
is that, Christian, is that fixed in 9? I mean, so is 9 and, right, didn't you just say, so for most of the modern browsers now,
right, that's fixed, so for right? Most of the modern browsers, they're rendering the same, but IE9 still does have that compatibility button, and I think it's more trouble than it's worth. I think that compatibility button was useful when we were going from IE6 to IE7, which was like a huge jump, but I think they should phase that out, especially now that we're coming into IE10. But at the same token, because we're getting on those super new technologies, HTML5 and such, I don't want to see them start doing it with the new technologies, because it finally looks like they have HTML4 and the CSS there pretty laid out. But CSS3, which brings in a lot of new features, and again, HTML5, if they don't have that same smoothness that they do with HTML4, it's going to be another developer tirade. So.
Sure.
Well, as a user, I've found IE9 to be... in my opinion, a lot safer browsing with than IE8. And what little I've used IE10 in Windows 8, I've liked it. I think it's a nice step up.
John, are you using both IE10 and IE10 Windows Experience? Windows 8 Experience,
yeah.
I should say.
In Windows 8, yeah. Mm-hmm. I prefer it really on the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I like to have multiple windows. If I launch it from the start menu, it's, I just have one window. And that's good if I want to go and just go someplace like the weather. I want to go to the Weather Channel and see what they have. And I have that icon on my desktop. I guess I should call it an app. But you save it like you used to save a shortcut, mm-hmm, onto your desktop.
Into the taskbar.
Right.
Right.
But you save it onto the start screen.
Right.
And so you just click on that, and it'll take you to that. And, before I found that they had a Newegg app, I had Newegg as my own app, and I would click on it, and it would take me to Newegg.
Isn't that ironic? One of the first... usable apps for Windows 8 is the new AGAP.
Yeah.
They were quick to get that out there. Christian, when you said Chrome 21... No, they're not at Newegg. They are not dumb. They've got us hooked like
they're reeling us in.
Oh, my gosh. Just like crack. I'll talk about Newegg here towards the end of the show. Christian, as you said Chrome 21, I was like, they're not up to 21. So I opened my Google Chrome. This is just ironic, I guess, or funny. I opened Google Chrome, and sure enough, 21.01180.83. But it was installing the next version. It was like, as I opened that, it was like...
done that as I've done it as well.
So it's like, it just proved Christian's point that they're not only they're iterating super fast on Chrome, but they are also... it was updating right as I was doing that. So, you know, what's different about that, though, on Chrome and even Firefox now is that thing updates in the background. You really don't even know. I don't even care when Chrome. I use Chrome all the time now. I don't even care what version of Chrome it's on. It's not for me, for the average guy. It's just not that big of a concern anymore. I don't think of it, at least on Chrome, I don't think of it like I used to think about, I'm using IE whatever. And I use IE when I have to get work email because the OWA, the Outlook Web Access, works better in IE than it does in any other browser, you know, amazingly enough that, I wonder why it works better in IE than anything else. Well, it's an Exchange client, right? So
So you guys haven't gone to 2010 yet, I take it.
No, I don't. I think we're still, well, no, we're in Exchange 2010.
Okay, because OWA 2010, our implementation of it looks exactly the same in Chrome as it does in IE now.
Oh, so maybe I should try it. Maybe it's just I haven't tried it since we upgraded. I'll have to give that a try after the show. Okay, I'll give it a shot.
I use Chrome on the iPad and iPod, but on my PCs I use IE9. IE9, IE10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of problems with IE9 on machines at home. Michelle's in particular. Every time it automatically upgraded to IE9, the machine had randomly blue screen and whatnot. I even went down the path of rebuilding it, and IE9 makes that machine blue screen. I don't know why.
Just that machine?
Yeah, just that machine.
What kind of machine is it?
It's a HP something or other that I picked up at a secondhand merchant. It's just really, really, really kooky. Doesn't do it running Vista, doesn't do it running Windows 8, but it does it running Windows 7 and IE9.
Just that combo does something. Maybe it's in the, maybe it's a BIOS's fault.
So you you have Windows 8 running on it?
I did have. I got told if I valued my marriage that it needed to go back to Windows 7.
Oh man, hey, let me talk about
how IE10 ran on it.
Oh, go ahead, Andrew. Sorry.
Yeah, ran really well. I've found that if the hardware is probably higher than a Pentium 4 3 gig, that Windows 8 and all its associated components run really well. But lower than a 3 gig, it tends to lag a bit. That's my experience.
Okay.
Single core?
Yeah, that'd be single core.
Yeah, okay. That was my experience too. I loaded it onto an e-machine, single core. And I mean, this thing was really old.
What processor was on it?
It was a single core. I can't remember.
Okay.
I'd have to look it up. But I thought it was really a leap of faith to think that Windows 8 would run on it, and it did. And it actually ran, I thought, a little faster than XP was running. But then XP that was on it had been loaded down with all kinds of stuff.
Sure.
But I got it on there, and you know, it was just kind of an experiment to see if it would run, and it did work, and so I was impressed.
You know, so let me tie that in. I was mentioning earlier. You know, I started this conversation by saying I'm getting all these laptops with these virus problems running Vista. I'm now in full fledged recommending Windows 8 mode for these folks on an upgrade. So. I purchased a couple Mushkin solid state drives for them, and they're going to actually go in this weekend. And I think, you know, you said wife acceptance factor or something along those lines.
Zero.
Just a second ago.
That was pretty low.
Sarah gets a SSD and Windows 8 this weekend in test mode, of course. I'm giving it to her in test mode.
I think she'll like it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I've kind of prepped her and said, okay, it's different. So get ready for it's a different experience. But I think it'll be a great opportunity for me to learn some things about how more the average guy is going to use Windows 8 than I do, because I'm not in that realm. I'm not the average guy. So I've said these things, but I'm really not the target audience. So it'll be interesting to see if she comes, like Michelle came back to you, Andrew, and said, you've got to put Windows 7 back on this. I assume that was her.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Yeah. you've got to put Windows 7 back on.
Polygamy is illegal in Australia.
I couldn't remember if you said significant other or if you said something.
I did say Michelle, yeah.
Okay. We'll see what she says. And so I've kind of prepped her for it, and I'm going to give her just a quick lesson in the tile and a desktop. And I don't know. And then when Windows comes, when I've already got my first family member, when Windows comes out on October 26th and the upgrade's available for $40, I've already got one lined up to do the upgrade. And I think I'm going to give her some lessons in advance and say, hey, I think going from Windows 8, from going from Vista to Windows 8 is a lot better. That's my premise.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be a lot more secure too.
Sure.
More sandbox.
To who?
As far as protecting the computer.
Yeah, I think, Christian, to answer your question, it's going to be more secure to the average person who just wants to do stuff on a computer.
I'm saying that's more secure to who, not as who's using it, but who's consuming it, right? So it's going to be more secure. Why? Because you're being enveloped in Microsoft's sandbox, which may sound good if it's preventing you from other nasty viruses, but the question you have to ask is, do you want your children playing in the Microsoft sandbox?
As long as there's no cats around, I think we're okay.
My son's 28, so you know he can play in the Microsoft. He's an engineer. He can handle it.
I probably so.
But that whole Microsoft interface is designed to pull you in. It's designed for marketing, for advertising, for tracking. Mm-hmm. So if you're just an average consumer and that doesn't go through your head, you are being entered into you're becoming part of the Microsoft environment of more. They're taking more of, with the operating system, they're taking more of a Google.
No, file. More of an Apple approach.
No. I'm not even talking about design. Forget design. I'm talking about from a marketing aspect, from advertising. They're definitely taking on more of a like cloud advertising model.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, but if the end user, if they want to use it and they like it,
so be it.
Yeah, go for it. It's either that or iOS.
It'll be interesting to see how she takes to it, and we won't upgrade. So Sarah will get upgraded this weekend, and then this family friend will get updated, you know, sometime late October. So I'm going to watch it carefully, and I kind of want to see how they respond to it. I brought out my laptop. So here was the big surprise. She is your typical computer user. Look, just how do I get on the browser? How do I do this? How do I do that? So I sat her down with my laptop that has Windows 8 on it, and I just said, okay, here's the interface. Here's where you log in. This is the these are the tiles. This is your old desktop. And she clicked on a few things and asked a few questions and then logged into her work. She immediately went to her work website, logged in, it worked. She said, it's fine, that's all I need to do. And so it'll be interesting to see if that's, you know, we know that's really not all that they do, but it'll be interesting to see how they do that. So it's coming close, guys, right? It's coming fast, honestly.
Well, I
think also once the new Office comes out, I think that's going to see a huge shift in the acceptability of it as well.
Yeah.
So once you can integrate fully into that tiled interface, I think it's gonna have to increase the acceptance rate.
Yeah, it adds a piece to it, certainly. And when you say the new Office, you're referring to the one for RT?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the one that integrates with Metro,
Right. Right. Oh, yeah, and that'll come out. I assume that's coming out on launch day, since That's the only version of Office that would be available for RT when it comes out on the 26th.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what, Office 13, 14,
2013.
Something like that?
Yeah, it's 2013.
Yeah, the Surface RT is going to have like a preview to 2013.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. And so that'll be like the starter edition for Office 2010, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know, the it's weird just watching this thing kind of go down. It went from fairly negative, and some folks are still negative, but it went to from fairly negative to I'm hearing more positive vibes about it. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm waiting for my corporate preview build, which is due in the next couple of weeks, and then I'll I don't have the leap. I don't have the ability yet to make that leap of faith to be my primary production machine.
Yeah.
And that's because I don't know that all the enterprise tools are going to work.
Sure.
So, you know, we use in-house stuff that I just can't see working for a year or so until they get the code right. But I think that what we'll see is that for your general user who's, you know, say an asset manager or a configuration manager or something like that, I think they'll be able to pick it up and run with it fairly well because all their apps run inside a browser.
Right.
You know, or they're using Excel, or they're using Access, or they live inside Outlook and Word.
Yeah, as long as they can get the work done that they want to get done, and they're going to have the benefit of the things starting up much faster, too. So, yeah. And well, you're not really playing fair, Jim, by also putting in an SSD load Windows 8. I mean, they're going to think this thing is just running at warp speed.
Darn right
I
am.
It's like taking a little kid fishing and putting a really light sinker on so they think they're getting bites all the time.
It's going to be awesome. I'm pretty excited to see what the performance changes for her. Now, she never complains about the boot time, so that's not like it's going to be like, oh, it boots so much faster.
She'll notice it.
The whole thing will be a lot faster in the way it operates. I'm really coaching folks to see through the tiles, so I'm saying, hey, the tiles come up. That's just a modified start screen. So instead of you going start programs, whatever, they're all right there, right? It's just a visual representation of that. Find the one you want, or just type in the name of it. And I think from that point on, everything else is exactly the same, right? I mean, once I've started my program, it could be Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8. It doesn't matter. Everything's still working the same like it used to. There's stuff going on behind the scenes. Andrew, go ahead.
It's closest to Vista.
Let's fight, Andrew. You and me are going to fight. This is exciting. There's certainly problems with it, and I don't want to be too Pollyannish on it. There's going to be some issues that come out right out of the chute, but
yeah.
I'm very excited about getting the tablet.
Yeah, I think what's going to be real interesting is the entire ecosystem, especially after the whole Apple-Samsung thing that unfolded this week. You know, the ruling goes out on, what was it, Tuesday that Samsung's got to pay Apple, what was it, $1.2 billion in patent mm-hmm. breach or whatever it happens to be. And then, lo and behold, Thursday, Samsung go, look, we've got a Windows 8 phone.
Right.
And by the way, while you're at it, you can buy our Surface device that's sold by Microsoft, and lo and behold, you've got your entire Wo2Go ecosystem that all looks and feels exactly the same.
Yeah. Here we thought Nokia would be the manufacturer of choice for Windows 8 and Windows 8 phone.
They're coming out with one.
I know they are. And actually, I just got an email from Nokia Connects today inviting me, hey, special presentation September 5th. So something is coming out from Nokia on September 5th, some kind of announcement about these, their new Windows products. But Andrew, I'm with you. So we copied. Microsoft and Apple already have a non-competition agreement between the two of them not to copy each other. And Windows 8, whether it's on the phone or on the desktop, is nothing like the Apple products. Nothing, right? Not a single piece like it. And they don't use round corners. So, So all of a sudden, this is weird. This is weird to me. I did not expect Samsung to get as aggressive as they're getting. But to your point, all of a sudden, Samsung's all Windows, right? In the last last week, they've been like, look at these, and they look great. They're great-looking devices.
Yep, they're slick-looking,
man,
well-built pieces of hardware.
Yeah, and maybe have beat Nokia to the punch on this.
Yeah, well, let's face it. I mean, Nokia's eventually going to go the way that Motorola did. You know, they'll get acquired by someone. They'll become someone else's hardware brand. And, you know, they'll disappear into a fold, you know, be that Apple, not Apple, you know, be that Microsoft, be that, you know, part of the Google family or something, you know, let's face it, they've got a great hardware platform, but their operating system has just sucked for so many years.
Yeah. Some good stuff coming up. Lots of stuff to talk about. Speaking of some cool hardware, Christian, you've put a pretty nice deal of the week in there, and so why don't we pop over to that? I'll throw it on the screen, and why don't you talk about it a little bit? You're muted, Christian. Sorry, you must have muted yourself.
Oh, he's just staying away from Windows 8.
We can't. No, we can't hear you yet. Something must have clicked off. Hold on, let me see. There you go. All right. Okay.
All right. Perfect. So, deal of the week. And again, there's things I sort of know why it, the way it is, but the deal of the week is a Vizio 37-inch LED HDTV, 1080p, 1920 by 1080. And I mean, this is $300. So if you're buying those top-end Dell monitors for your PC that are 30 inches that go for $1,000, and you don't really care about the actual like pixel by pixel quality, you just want screen real estate. Heck, buy one of these and throw in the HDMI cable. Again, the difference being that with these, even though it's a bigger panel, it's still the same resolution. So technically, it's still the same real estate space, but. Really not a bad option, I think.
That's a lot of space.
It is, but because of the resolution, remember, so you can't go above that. I don't think you can't drive that higher. So
everything's just, you're going to have to push that away, and everything's just going to be gigantic, right, pretty much. I mean, it's just going to be, but watching movies on it on your, from your desk would be great, for sure, right? Windows Media Center would look nice on there. $299 right now, Tiger Direct. I haven't bought this big of I think I paid for my Samsung TV that's this size. I think I paid $5 back in the day. And this is a refurb.
Yeah. We had those a long time ago. We bought those rebranded HP monitors that were like $500 a piece, that because they were rebranded from like TS Global, it was only they were only like $200 a piece for the same exact thing, but literally instead of the HP logo, it had the TS Global logo, and those are fantastic. We have those still around, and they just work. My dad's got 324 inches all running on the ATI 6950, and it's pretty cool.
Andrew, what were we going to say?
Oh, the only concern I'd have with something like that is maybe the refresh rate.
Yeah.
Being a little low.
Yeah, it's the drawback. With those sizes, you normally don't get above 60, though, right?
Especially if you're into gaming. I mean, I think for a serious gamer, you want to be 100 megahertz or higher. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, but even 200 megahertz TV.
Yeah, I mean, these Dell panels, they say 60 hertz, and then the ATI card rates it at 85. So,
you know what these would be great for is displays in small business where you want to, you know, you want to throw it on the wall and have ads running on it or something running on it.
Right.
We
have some of those. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. School lobbies or those kinds of things where you want to have, you're just gonna have a screen up somewhere that's gonna have some content running on it, but you're not maybe trying to game off of it or
right.
You know, where it doesn't need to be a high performance monitor.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome pricing though. It's amazing what's happening with pricing.
It's falling about as rapidly as our SSD prices, which is just nuts. We were talking about this on the home server show last night, and I think pretty quick here, you know, you're 256 is the next, you know, the 120s are kind of in the zone. I think that's the ideal price point for most people. I can upgrade. When I was upgrading this family member's laptop, I said, hey, we could put an SSD drive in here. She said, oh, that's going to be a lot, right? I mean, like $300. I said, how about 90? And she was like, oh, done. She's only got 160 gig spinner in there to begin with. So on these older boxes, for $90, she can get 120 gig. That'll be plenty on a laptop. She's already really good with backing it up, too. She's got one of those Western Digital bookshelf USB drives that she backs it up with. So, yeah. God, that's a no-brainer. At $90, that's a no-brainer for 120. John, you're probably watching those prices a little more carefully, aren't you? Are you staying on top of SSD? I know you post in the forums all the time, the deals. What are you seeing for the 250 in that range?
I was just trying to recall. I think Corsair, they had the Corsair GT 240, and I think they had a rebate on it, and you could, after the rebate, it was like $160-some.
That's what I thought too.
And those, and the GT, the Corsair GT, and the Corsair Force 3 are really nice SSDs, really fast.
Read and writes on those are about what?
Both, yeah, both read and writes. You're pushing.
What are they benchmarked at?
I'm just quoting from memory, but the GT is both reads and writes are a little bit over 500.
Okay.
And the Force 3, the reads are over 500, and the writes are just brushing up to 500.
I think these Kronos, these
we could Mushkins, probably look at this on Newegg.
I think these are the same thing. These Kronos ones, I think they're rated at 500 each, and I've installed three of them and just have had great success with it. Both my PCs, both the broadcast server and my PC are running one now, and I can't even imagine going back. So it's.
Yeah. While we've been talking, actually, I've just had an email come in from an eBay store that I've bought some stuff off. A Kingston 240 gig SSD, model number, blah, blah, blah. But they're saying 535 megabytes per second. What is that, megabits? For $185 for 240 gig. So the price is definitely dropping.
Yeah, oh, it's dropping like a rock.
And it's becoming really appealing, too.
Yeah, and more people, this is a good average guy purchase, I think, at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because it doesn't take any more effort in most cases. It doesn't take any more effort to replace it than it does to replace your drive if it went bad. And so in her case, we're going to make a backup copy of the OS through the it's an HP, and so we're going to make, you know, OS disks for her, and then I'm going to swap the drives and reinstall. In this case, we're going to reinstall Vista until Windows 8 comes out. But simple, fairly simple, even for the average guy, could replace a hard drive in it. So I think they're selling more. They used to be super expensive, and I just think more are being sold. Christian, what's the next big purchase for you? What are you keeping your eyes on from a hardware standpoint besides the Raspberry Pi?
It's kind of hard to tell because I'm doing some secret scheming to get some return on that. So if I can get the return on that that I'm looking for, I might either reinvest in... I was thinking about seeing how feasible it would be to get a static line, a static IP line in here so that I could get all of my websites off these shared and virtual hosts and bring it all in-house and build some failover clusters.
Because why wouldn't the average home user do that?
Right. I mean, everyone
love it
should
when you
be.
Say that.
Right. But I mean, I was really excited because I'm working on a new site that's getting ready to launch soon, and I was amazed that I was able to get Apache virtual hosts on my virtual private server to just work flawlessly. And it's incredible how they're both using the same static IP. And Apache is just serving these requests dynamically based off the URL that it's coming from, and it knows which site to go to, even though it's resolving to the same exact static IP, which I think is just fantastic. And I mean, that's how the shared hosting environment works, right? They have these supercomputers with 64 gigs of RAM, and they're just keeping these huge Apache log files. But I mean, that's the first time where because I have the VPS and I have root access, that I've been able to control that. And that was just really cool because the site runs super fast. I mean, you would never know that it's only running on 2 gigs of memory, and yet I can have 100 concurrent connections and it doesn't use more than a gig. Now, if that was with your out-of-a-box Apache, you would get about 20 concurrent connections and it would die. But I have a pretty beefed-up version with the what's called Mod Fast CGI, which in human talk is basically a script header that just takes your entire website, kind of puts it in one little application that runs. And it just it's amazing how much it cuts down on the resource overhead. So I can now run multiple sites and have all these connections open, and the server just keeps on chugging. So I'm really pumped because I finally have a solid configuration. But ideally, what I would like to do is take that same solid configuration I have out there, make a clone of it, get a static line in here, pull all of it out, take all my stuff off, post it here. That's where I want to end up. I really don't see the justification for going to what Verizon wants to do that. I mean, from a bandwidth perspective, stuff is very affordable, but that's with the dynamic IPs. And they go to static, it's pretty sticky. So at this point, I think it's what I want to do. It's my next step. But if I'm really going to do it, then either I haggle with Verizon or I come up with the funds. So. Okay. I'm not going to do extra budgeting for it, you know.
Can you move the average guy there?
Yeah.
Awesome.
We'd be able to do all sorts of stuff once we got that line.
Sweet. The server farm that is the Johnson household. Always amazed. You guys always amaze me. Very, very awesome. Looking forward to that. That'd be great. You and I have done a bunch of web work lately, so you're actually teaching me a ton about what you can do. And every time I think I've got you stumped, you pull one out of your hat and get it. Did we ever get Rad Racing back up?
Oh, I'm on the list, I promise.
don't worry about it. John, you just a quick look back when we were talking about SSDs. You threw some stuff in the show notes real fast. Basically, you were comparing two different drives, and you the GT versus the non-GT. Is that what you were referring to in the notes?
I compared the Corsair GT versus the Corsair Force 3, and they're essentially the same. And right now you can get the GT for $169.99 with the rebate. That's the 240.
Okay.
And I've noticed I've been watching them, and it's like Corsair. They'll do a rebates on the GTs, and then they do a rebates on the Force 3s, and they just kind of go back and forth. And it seems like you can see it going in waves. You could almost you could probably put a waveform function to this and
some
calculate
math,
how it's going to happen and everything. Yeah, yeah. And but it seems to bounce a little bit lower each time. And I've noticed it. I don't know if you followed the Crucial line, but the RIM4s, which are also good. They're pretty good, I think. I've had good luck with them, but they're 512s. I can remember when those things were over $700, and now now the regular price on a 512 is $399. I've seen them when they've had them for $369, and you know I bet by the end of the year they're going to be below $350.
Yeah, and I don't see for the average user. I don't see the need to go as high as 512 for like a laptop. I think that's a little bit of an overkill.
No, but I think it's great that they are coming down because they push everything else down.
Sure. Yeah, you know, one of the things Drobo has been on the rampage this last week. Paul Brerin and Kevin Schoonover have been at VMworld in San Francisco, and big conference, a lot like Oracle Open World, a lot of vendors. Although it's a lot of storage vendors that are out there. Drobo's got a booth out there, and they're showing the Drobo Mini right at this little box. It's about that big. And it takes 4 2.5-inch drives that you can put in, and then it uses BeyondRAID to manage it. It's kind of the
something to do with the 512s,
right? No. That's where I'm going with it. Is that it'll take both spinners or SSD. It's got two Thunderbird, right? Ports that come out of the back and USB 3, I think. I'd have to verify.
Hey, Virgil.
Yeah,
they do. Yeah, and, Paul posted a video of that where he picked it up and turned it around and everything, and it was It had the USB coming off too.
Yeah, and they both that and the new 5 bay have mSATA for some SSD caching. That if you're putting spinning drives in there, the Beyond RAID has been written now to take advantage of some SSD caching. So, you know, when you say 512 SSD, load that bad boy up with 4 512. I mean, that's an expensive little drive that you have there. I'm just going to say it. It's expensive.
Oh yeah,
that's the full fauché. That's
that
for
is
sure.
Definitely that is the definition of the full fauché. But
you need a second one.
Think about you'd have to buy two because you want to test them.
Yeah, so you get 8 drives.
That's right. Well, from a portability standpoint, though, imagine having both the redundancy and the portability of that little drive with 2 terabytes, basically about two. It'd be about 1.5 by the time you with redundancy built in. But that would be a super. Again, they're not cheap, but that's what's coming to be able to put these drives in. So, Andrew, anything?
That's return on investment, though, isn't it? I mean, what are you using it for, and how much are you going to sink into it?
Yeah,
and expect to get back from it.
You got to ask that question. There's cheaper ways to do it for sure.
Yeah,
and but you got to kind of work through that. So I'm hoping I've been pinging Mario back at Drobo. I've been hoping to get one of those in my hands here. In the next, they're not even out of production yet, so nobody has them. Callie Lewis had one today, but it was a pre-production Drobo Mini that isn't even the one that they're gonna. It's just the one that, you know, the prototype.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get one in my hands, and then we have a home server show meetup on October 20th out in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So if you're a listener, John's excited about that. Me too. If you're a listener, woo-hoo, and you're within 600 miles of Indianapolis, we expect you to be there. And
that's the benchmark now, is it?
That's the benchmark, because that's what I'm driving to get there. So we will be making the trip out there, and hopefully I'm hoping by that time Drobo will have some equipment for us to look at. I'm sure we'll have some Synology stuff as well. We're asking folks to bring their own stuff that they want to show. And I'll be taking here reservations for folks who want to speak on various topics as well. So if you want to talk about VM, if you want to talk about home server stuff, if you want to talk about anything, Windows 8, I'll probably give a little Windows 8 presentation since I'm the Windows 8 fanboy here.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Definitely drink. I am definitely drinking the Kool-Aid. That is for sure. That's coming up October 20th. Andrew, we're running a little short on time. I noticed you did drop something in the show notes. Do you want to talk about that briefly?
No, I captured it. There was the whole Apple, Samsung.
Done. For now. And until Motorola Mobility filed suit against Apple, Thursday? On Monday?
Yep.
And I think it was on Monday, and is trying to block the import of iPads. iPods, iPhones, and MacBook Pros.
All over the world.
Yeah,
I think what we're going to see come out of this, and what I hope we don't see come out of this, is that there becomes a huge move against Android. It's got that real smell about it at the moment, that all of a sudden Apple's going to shift focus from Samsung, and it's going to be Google, your operating system needs to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real concern for the mobile industry.
Well, if there was ever a time for Windows Phone, we talked about this last night. If there's ever a time, the blocking is in place for Windows Phone right now, all the things that are going on with Android. Now, it could be that hole could close pretty quick and Windows could get tackled. But to use the football analogy, this could be the moment that Windows has been waiting for, and if things get tied up and we have all these kinds of problems and Samsung floods the market or some really nice Windows devices come out, and I don't know. I don't make any money either way off of them, so I don't. It'll just be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm pretty much sitting back watching as well. I mean, I'm waiting to get my hands on a Galaxy Nexus at the moment. I'm just waiting for the price to come right, so I've decided on my next handset. But I'm also watching this whole thing with great interest, because it's going to set some really, really horrible precedents if Apple get their way on this whole conceptual patent, you know, being able to swipe side to side on a phone.
Yeah, it's a good thing Windows goes up and down, huh? Windows Phone?
Yeah.
Up and down.
You know, I mean, if someone had patented breathing, we'd all be in a world of hurt.
Or what if they got the patent on the idea of a cell phone? or a smartphone, you know, something like that. Of course, those things were all out before Windows Phone came out. But I see your point. Yeah, this is a little bit, we're in some dangerous territory for sure.
Very much so, yeah.
Well, guys, let me say a few things. Christian, anything else that you wanted to cover in your part?
No, I think life's pretty sweet.
John, anything you wanted to? It is definitely sweet.
Yeah.
John, anything else you wanted to cover real quick?
I would just second what Christian said. Life is great. I think we're living in an interesting time.
Yeah, and this is golden for sure.
And I was just going to say too, I'm looking forward to the meetup.
Yeah, it'll be good. I've never actually met you. Did we meet at the? You didn't come to the last meetup, did you?
Did.
Where's sure the meetup I did. This time?
Were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
Okay, I can't. You know, that's I can't remember.
In fact, I have a picture of me next to you.
No.
Yeah.
Oh shoot. You know what? The only thing I remember about that meetup is a year and a half ago, was that I would work like crazy to get that podcast to work.
I mean, I remember that.
Oh my God. Yeah. All I did from the time I got there till we did the podcast, and then it never really worked very well. I need to get, if anybody has some advice, so a couple things I'm looking for. This is a help wanted or help needed section of the podcast. So you can, if we'll listen through it, you'll want to hear it. So one is, if you have any great ideas on how I could do a public podcast like that and broadcast it out, but be behind it and not have the sound echo back through our mics, I'll take any advice anybody has. So podcast@theaverageguy.tv, shoot me a note on Twitter, at Jay Collison. Catch us on Facebook. We do have a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy. Get out there. Let me know, because I don't know how to do that for sure, and I'd love some advice. We'd love to do some podcasting from there, but anytime you try to do a live podcasting and you got mics involved, we got this really wicked echo. So even we had headsets too. So that was horrific. So
noise canceling mics.
I would be interested in how to do that too, because I'm having that from a practical standpoint. We do hangouts with other family members, and we're using the we're just doing it like the average guy would, where you have the microphone and the camera and the speakers, tied into the TV speakers. You get a lot of echo back and forth.
There's supposed to be noise canceling in both Skype and Google Hangouts. There's supposed to be noise canceling.
I turn it on, but it's still.
It's not working, no. It doesn't always work very well.
No.
And so that's why for the podcast, that's why we all wear, earbuds, because as soon as you turn on speakers, you're going to get, you heard that when we interviewed Amber Gott, last week, she didn't have any earbuds in, and we were getting some feedback, from her. So that's one. If you've got some advice for me, I'd love to dialogue with you on that, track me down and let's talk about it. Cause I'd love to be able to do some live podcasting from the meetup. Two, I'm looking for someone, if there's interested in writing an Android or an iPhone app for the Average Guy Network that would have our RSS feeds or our podcast already embedded in it. And so someone could just download it and it would automatically download the podcast as they come out. I want the Average Guy not to have to work very hard at it. And I want it just to be an app. You can charge for it if you want. I like the 99-cent model. I don't care. Everything you would own, everything about it. I just the only thing that you would work with us on is the branding of it. So it kind of matches everything else that we're doing. But I'd love to make it easier for folks. I have all the time. I have people come to me and say, "Man, I'd love to listen to the podcast, but I just don't know how to do it, and I can't go to the website every time. How do I do it on my phone?" And it's still, even Pod, I think I use Beyond Pod on my phone. Those are a mystery to the average guy. I just want them to be able to get an app, listen to it. When it's done, it goes away. If you have questions, again, catch me, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. And Christian, I know you don't have time for that, so don't even think about it. Because I know you try.
You need to get someone like Gary Whitaker on the job.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then I think that's all I've got as well. So I'll remind folks that if they have joined us for the first time, or if they want to know how to do things, we have all the links that you need to subscribe or download or stream the audio or video podcast to iTunes, YouTube, Zoom, Stitcher, all those other podcasters that are out there. If you're a little more savvy about it, actually on your phone, you can just go to theaverageguy.tv and click it. Well, No, that doesn't work anymore either because I put a mobile app in. Shoot. Just try hard. Sorry. Of course, you can always find us on Reddit, YouTube, iTunes, Google+, even Facebook by searching The Average Guy Podcast and leave some comments, likes, votes, plus ones, any of those other helpful tidbits. That always helps us out when you let us know about those things. And then don't forget, we have an Amazon link or Amazon affiliate link on the front page. If you think you might be purchasing something from Amazon and you go through it, the podcast makes a few cents. That helps us pay for the bandwidth and soon maybe pay Christian and his new server farm as we bring The Average Guy up over at the Johnson household. Gentlemen, thanks again for coming out. Always good to have you guys around. And if you're listening live, we appreciate you guys coming out as well. And just remind folks they can listen to the podcast every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. And if they miss it, we record it just for them out at theaverageguy.tv. And while you're out there, if you see an advertising link, click on it. It that helps us as well. Everybody have a great night. We'll see you back here next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Firefly?
No, Battlestar.
Yeah, Firefly went off too. It's
That was a great show.
I just watched Serenity, the movie at the end. I just watched that again the other night.
That was the movie that was supposed to re-erect the TV series. Fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to subsonic that to me?
I watched it on Netflix.
Oh, come on. I can upload it to you.
Come on.
Come on.
It was too bad that didn't come back.
Copy.
And it's you know what, though? We wouldn't have gotten Castle if that series had kept going. So Castle's been a good show. Okay, you guys ready? We are show 86. Today is August 30th. And let's get rolling.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Keep them doggies rolling, right.
Yeah.
There we go. Golly, I can't leave like one moment of silence in the show. It gets filled with something. Christian's meowing or some singing. Here we go. This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 80. Jeez, you threw me off, Andrew.
Take two.
Here we go. All right, here we go.
Anyone know how to draw an oven?
Draw an oven?
Yeah.
Do you want to start the show or you just want
to Sorry.
Talk about meaningless crap? Here we go. This is the...
Oh. Well, you're back! You just got rid of everything I was going to talk about.
I know. If you're watching this for the first time, I'm sorry. this week in crap, and this is the Home Tech Podcast show. Are you gonna let me do the introduction, Andrew? Or
has anyone registered that?
What this week in crap?
Yeah.
I don't know, Rennie. Is there anything you can do about Andrew? He is just unruly tonight.
Hang on, I'll go on mute that way.
Okay, there we go. Look it up. See if this week in crap is available. It might be my next site. Mute your, because you're typing. Is that your typing?
No, it's Christian. Oh, man. Yeah, someone's already done it. It's a video cast.
Okay.
CBS Chicago.
This week in crap.
This week in crap.
Rennie says, shut up, Andrew.
Oh, sorry, that's crap of the week.
This crap weekly. Here we go. Let's try it. Let's try to get started.